Shri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, Krishna, the actual object of worship and devotion for all living beings, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the form of his own devotee just over 500 years ago and famously predicted Prithi Vite Ache Jato Nagaradi Gram Sarvatra Prachahuibe Moranam, in every town and village of the world, my name will be propagated. This prediction, which seemed to be some phantasmagorical notion impossible to fulfill, was fulfilled by the preaching mission of His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, who introduced Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti, all over the world. Inevitably, after the passing of a highly charismatic, highly influential spiritual leader and innovator, other groups, apart from that which he personally started, other groups will come in his wake, giving somewhat different message, or giving something which purports to give the same fruit, the same result that he gave, but relaxing the required restrictions. Nowadays, there are many, many groups throughout the world who practice in some form or another Krishna bhakti. The word bhakti has become known all over the world. There are many groups, most of them taking inspiration from, getting life from Srila Prabhupada and his ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Although some are in the West because they're taken by Indians who have emigrated there. But even those groups are getting life and this inspiration from ISKCON. And objectively speaking, although these groups who practice bhakti in various ways, they sort of various ways means shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam, hearing and chanting about, focusing on Vishnu. Practically speaking, the standards that Srila Prabhupada set for ISKCON in terms of following principles, sadhana, the general standard for members of other groups are not so high as those implemented by ISKCON. And some of them are, they incorporate some elements by which they can be compared to what in Bengal, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, in Bengal among the what we ourselves would call the standard orthodox followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would call upper sampradaya. That means a group which is practicing bhakti or something similar to bhakti, but which is really not to the point which is deviated. In ISKCON, we generally term those groups sahajiya. We put a blanket term, sahajiya. Prakrita sahajiya means group of supposed followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who grossly deviate from the regulative principles. Upper sampradayas, they may not be so also gross, but the Prakrita sahajiyas are particularly gross in not following the regulative principles. In Bengal, they may advocate, some of these groups, they may actually advocate illicit sex is okay, eating flesh food is okay, you just chant Hare Krishna. Now, I had quite some experience of such groups during the 10 years or so in which I was mostly based in Bengal, mostly based in Bangladesh, the nation called Bangladesh, and traveling in the villages there. I had good or bad first-hand experience of that. So I was a bit surprised last month when I was speaking with one of my old friends, devotees, that conversation is published, Rancho Prabhu, who told me that in the part of England where he lives now, in an area in the western part of England, there are what we would call very similar to, in many ways, to the Sahajiyas of Bengal. And in fact, their guru is, so he told me, I never heard of them before, from Bangladesh, originally now living in Vrindavan, and he comes to England every year. Probably not, didn't come in the pandemic. And this group, they have a taste for chanting. They'll go on chanting Hare Krishna for hours. But they have some bad habits, particularly this particular group, unlike Sahajiyas of Bengal, their particular misunderstanding and malpractice is that they like to take LSD, which is dilysergic acid, something like that, which is an intoxicant, an illegal drug, psychotropic drug, which they think is something spiritual. So this is what Rancho Prabhu told me. Now, when he told me their guru is from Bangladesh and they love to chant, they'll join with Rancho Prabhu, and among themselves they'll chant for hours and hours the Hare Krishna mantra. Some would come to hear him give talks, but then when he gets into philosophy and starts talking about principles, they melt away. And it just reminded me of Bangladesh, because it's so similar. Obviously, it's not exactly the same. It's very, very similar to what I experienced in the late 1979 and throughout the 1980s. But I thought, well, in some ways, that's good. If they have a taste for chanting their holy names, that puts them well ahead. I was in Bangladesh in the 1980s, and we weren't making much progress in many ways in preaching, but things have picked up by the continual presenting of the message of Krishna consciousness as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, recent acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our own most worshipable Srila Prabhupada. So many people have changed their habits and understood that the real path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't allow flesh eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and they've become very serious, and there are literally thousands of initiated devotees there. I think it was the last time I visited Bangladesh, about 2 years ago. I was in one town, and I said, when I first came here, there wasn't a single vegetarian in the whole town. There is majority Muslim population, but many Hindus also. Now, I said, there are hundreds and hundreds. I was giving a talk in Bengali. And one devotee, I said, shota shota, which means hundreds and hundreds of vegetarians. I would say, and he corrected me, said, hazar hazar, thousands and thousands of vegetarians. So our aim isn't to make people vegetarians, but it is a sign that, not to make vegetarians per se, but it is a sign that our preaching is taking effect. So I thought, well, that's good they have a taste for the holy name. It's something you can build on, and maybe gradually in future generations, or by persistent preaching of the actual message, people who have a taste for the holy names but who are addicted to bad habits, they can change also. So it's a good start. It's a lot better than nothing. It's a lot better than being an atheist. or to have no interest in Krishna consciousness whatsoever. So in one sense, it's very good. In another sense, it's very bad because it misrepresents the actual sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's what I was thinking. That somehow or other they have some taste for chanting. That's something very valuable. As it happened, shortly after I made that comment, which came spontaneously to my mind, thinking of Bangladesh, the gurus from Bangladesh, I came across in Chaitanya Bhagavat commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, stating that, well, it's not better than nothing, it's worse than nothing. That was what he said, because it's, yeah, like I said, they misrepresent the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's one perspective than that is worse than nothing. But in another sense, preaching in Bangladesh has been very effective among the Hindu community because they already have the culture of chanting Hare Krishna with mridangas and kartals, which is very prominent there among the Hindus there. And generally among Hindus in general, it's observable, and it's stated in Shastra that birth in India is very special. It means you already have a head start in devotional service. So although preaching among Indians has its own difficulties, its own challenges, but it is the very fact that they have that cultural background and piety does make it, in that sense, easier to bring Krishna consciousness to them. So in one sense, it's very good that they have a head start. On the other hand, they have so many misconceptions. So that's one group of Western Sahajiyas. I guess you can out just say they are Sahajiyas. They're coming, their guru, so-called, is a Sahajiya, what we would definitely rate as a Sahajiya. And there are many, well, not so many, but increasingly there'll be different groups who espouse different things, some of them in the name of Srila Prabhupada, some not in the name of Srila Prabhupada. Another group that I was recently made aware of is, Bhakti Marg. One devotee send me an email with a link telling me about some guru who, he's in his late 40s, he's from Mauritius, Indian background, who was in ISKCON at some point and then affiliated himself with they call themselves a Western branch of the Sri Sampradaya. Well, the Sri Sampradaya comes from Ramanuja, Sri Ramanuja Acharya. But although they claim to be followers of Ramanuja and wear tilak, which is pretty much the same as the Vadigalai tilak, the two main branches of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya here in India. But at the same time, he claims or some affiliation to the guru of some Paramahamsa Yogananda, some famous Mayavadi, and they established Radha Krishna temples, which is not, it's not Sri Vaishnavas, it's not in their line. And they chant on beads, just like we chant one round of japa, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So they do it on each bead chanting, Om Namo Narayana. So it's mixing elements of Sri Vaishnavism with Neo-Mayavad, we can't even call that line of Paramahamsa Yogananda the orthodox Mayavad, and Gaudiya practices. So it's a bit of a mix. It's definitely not the the exact Sri is what exactly is their philosophy? Are they Sri Vaishnavas, are they Gauriyas, are they Mayavadis? Their motto is just love. As if you can go directly to step out of material contamination and just love. Anyway, there are so many things I could say on the downside of it. The upside is that, again, they have some, even though it's unorthodox and it's hard to imagine, although they claim affiliation or approval from Sri Vaishnava Acharyas, it's hard to imagine that they could be accepted as orthodox Sri Vaishnavas, but they have some following. I wouldn't be surprised if many of them were the following, in Europe in particular, they have some following. If the followers are originally from the ISKCON affiliation. Oh, the lizard says so. Okay. Don't know if you heard that. So, it's definitely much better than being atheists, gross materialists, that they have a feeling, some attraction to Narayana, Krishna. So it depends which perspective you look at it from. Is it good or it's bad? Well, it's good they're chanting Om Namo Narayanaya. Of course, we learn. Yep, lizard agrees again. Okay, thank you very much. Sampradaya vihinaye mantraste nishvalamata. The sampradaya not received in an accepted sampradaya, it's not going to give the full and proper result. So there's some difficulty or problem there also. I don't know enough about them to say that we would classify them as sahajiyas, but it's something unorthodox, but there are going to be so many unorthodox. And then you may say, well, who claims what is orthodox? Who will say what is orthodox? Well, from what we're saying, it means those who follow the strict path given by Srila Prabhupada, we will say they are we can say they're orthodox followers of Gaudiya Vaishnavism as given by Srila Prabhupada. And then if you're going to be actually a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there should be some certain principles. No fish eating, for instance. In Bengal, it's a tough one to get over, to get convince people to stop eating fish. If they may chant Hare Krishna but eat fish. Or they should be aligned with a standard branch of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. I say Vargalai, Tengalai, there's also Vaikanasa. So they have a specific established approach which is based on particular philosophical understanding, practiced for hundreds of years, Ramanuja Sampradaya, 1,000 years, and then various, we can say, branches came out somewhat later, but they have a standard practice, and it's not that just someone can make up something new, that is not accepted. So we can say they're unorthodox, but who knows in the Western world, who cares, and people can practice whatever they feel attracted to, and somehow or other, if they're chanting Hare Krishna or Om Namo Narayana, okay, very good, but is it actually the path which is going to give them the highest benefit? That has to be considered also. We can't expect that everyone's going to stay in ISKCON, and ISKCON has its own, failings, foibles, follies. And even if we were practicing perfectly, which is not possible in this world, that everyone will practice perfectly, then still many people may prefer something different because there are strict rules to follow if we are to be an initiated member within ISKCON. But again, it's something is better than nothing, we can say. Better than abject Maya is to be somehow or other chanting the holy names of the Lord. Now, another group I'm going to discuss today has been advertised recently on the Dandavats website, which is the official website, or at least it's supported by the GBC of ISKCON. This is a preaching endeavor within ISKCON. I'm not sure I'm talking about outside ISKCON, but it in their ashram, I'm not going to mention the name, but within the ashram that they run in America, they've made some adjustments to make Krishna consciousness more acceptable to modern young Americans, whatever that means, because everyone's an individual, but we can say with a certain constituency or demograph within the huge genre of modern young Americans, they made some adjustments within their ashram. They have Mangala Arati later, significantly later than Srila Prabhupada had it, and they certain things which Srila Prabhupada emphasized, social issues, which they don't emphasize. I'll get back to that a little later. So this is promoted on the Dandavats website, and I sent the link to a disciple of mine who is no longer based in America, but who spent many years there engaged in trying to bring and successfully bringing young Americans to Krishna consciousness. So I wrote to him and asked him what did he think of their claims, and overall they claim to have brought 300 young people to Krishna consciousness over the last 15 years, which is very likely true. So I asked him, what in your experience has been the effect of this on ISKCON in America? And he said, he's replied to me, it has had an effect on ISKCON in America, the endeavor of this one ashram in one place in America. By their activities and their approach, they managed to attract young people and deepen their interest in the theology of Krishna consciousness, what we usually call the philosophy, and our practices. They also get those who join and stay in their ashram for some time. They get to experience the life of Krishna consciousness in a relatively serious way, and they gradually commit themselves more and more to chanting the holy names, japa, following the principles, and so on. And they've had some success in bringing people in this way, which is not seen much elsewhere in America, so that's notable. Now, this devotee wrote to me that to make all this work that ashram dispenses with, ooh, watch out, that sounds dangerous, dispenses with, or at least dampens, what probably most devotees in America would consider non-essential presentations in Srila Prabhupada's books. And he lists some of them: social organization, social dynamics, social classes, we're talking about Varnashram and in general, Srila, let me read this. Social organization, social dynamics, social classes, authority structure, and other elements that severely clash with the modern world concepts. To put that in context, Srila Prabhupada, in his books and in his other teachings, verbal and written, speaks very strongly against the demoniac civilization. For instance, in his one aspect he is very strong on is the how women's the concept of women's independence is something which is promoted by demons. And if you see his purport to Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 16, text 7, Srila Prabhupada very strongly lambastes the demons for promoting independence of women. This is not at all popular among a certain demographic, many, especially if we could say the more educated or middle class young Americans. So this ashram has dispensed with, or at least dampens these topics about authority structure as required within ISKCON, within society in general. And something shocking that he writes him, what this, from his experience, he writes, probably most devotees in America would consider non-essential presentations in Srila Prabhupada's books. So what's essential? The spiritual part, Chan Hare Krishna, but the numerous, profuse statements on social issues, all based on Shastra, as given by Srila Prabhupada, they consider non-essential. Most devotees in America, he writes, most devotees in America consider this non-essential, and it's quite acceptable to dispense with that if we can get more people to chant Hare Krishna and take up Krishna consciousness in a relatively serious way. So he continued his writing, when such people, now devotees, enter the ISKCON world, they surely influence it according to their conventions. So I replied, obviously a problem with attempting to dispense with social values as Srila Prabhupada presents them is that those thus preached to will not want to read Srila Prabhupada's books, which are full of social statements, which are non-PC, not politically correct, according to the majority consensus. Which means, if you don't want to read Prabhupada's books, you won't want to distribute them, nor participate in his Varnashram mission, because Varnashram is society is specifically hierarchical, privileging certain classes over another, and in some ways privileging a certain gender over the other. Now, this point, you may say, well, isn't it worth dispensing with all of that? You know, Varnashram, that can wait in the future. In the meantime, let's get some people to chant Hare Krishna. We need to get some people in. I'm just wondering, how far do we go with that? Do we go as far as the Bangladeshi Sahajiya, who no rules, just chant Hare Krishna? Obviously not, if we're at all to call ourselves followers of Srila Prabhupada, nor do the proponents of these ideas say that. But we should also consider that numbers in themselves are not indicative of success in preaching. There are many Sai Baba, Deepak Chopra, how many so-called followers do they have? Even when Srila Prabhupada was personally present, there was a faction among his followers under Siddha Swarupa Ananda Goswami who wanted to present Krishna consciousness in a manner more appealing to Western youth. And he was successful in bringing many people to a version of Krishna consciousness that was not as strict in dress and approach and gender discrimination as that given by Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada tolerated it to some extent, but he also made known that he considered it a deviation. So numbers in recruitment can't be accepted as a sign of success, unless the numbers are clearly in line with the path given by Srila Prabhupada. At least with the ISKCON, we have to say that. the previous acharyas. Another point, although the group themselves haven't said that we dispense with non-essential, I don't, as far as I know, they don't say that. But this idea, parts of Prabhupada's books are essential, other teachings are non-essential. When Srila Prabhupada gives pages and pages of discussion of on social values in the Varnashram system, it's pretty risky to say it's non-essential. Pretty risky. Now, in one sense, it's not essential, because anyone in any position can chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. But then, most people, they do require, because we do require social systems, and we do require a social system which supports our practices, one that promotes or allows, they're practically the same thing, easy gender interaction, loose interaction, is not going to be very favorable for Krishna, practicing Krishna consciousness, or becoming free from the attraction between male and female. Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya granti mahuhu. They say, persons who know, Rishabhdev says, that the attraction between male and female is the binding force in material life. And that can be purified, dovetailed in Krishna conscious marriage life. But there can be problems with that also. It might be better, it is better, just why don't we just be straightforward and make it clear that, well, we, instead of saying that, well, we've got a better preaching method of following Srila Prabhupada, just say, well, there are certain things about Srila Prabhupada's teachings which we don't want to present. We don't agree with it. Make it clear. Honesty attracts honest people. If we want to twist the philosophy and the teachings to try to pretend that Srila Prabhupada, that we're following something, we're following Prabhupada, when there's something significantly different to what Srila Prabhupada said, well, that's a kind of cheating, and cheating will attract cheaters. And we find in discussions going on this, on various related points, that those who call themselves followers of Srila Prabhupada go to all kinds of word jugglery to try to negate Srila Prabhupada's statements, which they don't like. So why not just be straightforward? Otherwise, if you say, I love Srila Prabhupada, I'm his follower, but you don't follow or you don't like some of his teachings, then how can you actually be his follower? People should know what they're actually getting into. They should be told that we are followers of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada repeatedly made certain statements which, according to the modern way of thinking, in America, not in all the world, is considered sexist, non-politically correct, etc. Sooner or later, people are going to see what Srila Prabhupada wrote. If you have Srila Prabhupada's picture on the altar and you talk about Srila Prabhupada, and then we should encourage them to read Srila Prabhupada's books. They read what's in the books. And when they read it repeatedly, and Prabhupada, he doesn't mince his words. He's very straightforward about these things. The people, if they're actually intelligent, will they not realize that Srila Prabhupada is serious when he talks about non equality, non-social equality between the two genders. Two. Notice I said that, two genders. He's serious about that. And he's serious about dividing society into Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, and what is below that. Most of world society at the present time doesn't even qualify as to the level of a Vedic Shudra, lower than that. We're trying to elevate people to the platform of pure Vaishnavas, or at least to the Varnashram level. That is a major part of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. It's not just a matter of bringing in numbers by kowtowing to the postmodern or post-reality ethos. It's definitely going to be easier in the West if we say that, yes, we accept men and women completely equal in all respects, but not exactly. Spiritually, yes. In opportunity to go back to Godhead, yes. But socially, there is significant difference. The humility to accept that, well, Srila Prabhupada, he knew what he was talking about. We are not the ones who can come and reinterpret a major part of his teachings, even if it does initially repulse many people who would otherwise be interested in Krishna consciousness. You see in the west of England, so many people are chanting Hare Krishna, but they take LSD. And when we try to speak the real philosophy, they're repulsed, they go away. Does that mean we say, it's okay, you take LSD, you chant Hare Krishna? Well, in one sense, it is okay, but somehow or other, you chant Hare Krishna. But that is not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meant when he said, my name will be propagated all over the world. He wasn't desiring to make so many cults which deviate from the proper standard of human behavior as given in the Shastra. Srila Prabhupada was able to be successful in preaching Krishna consciousness because, well, there may be many reasons stated, but he wanted to give the real thing. He did make adjustments for the Western world. He made it clear that these adjustments, he's made various adjustments, but he does want to institute the Varnashram system for the sake of establishing Krishna consciousness strongly in the world. Varnashram dharma, drit, to hold, that which sustains. It's very difficult to sustain a proper standard of Krishna consciousness without having basic normative dharma within society. We're not attached to Varnashram in and of itself. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, following the previous acharyas, very much wanted to institute it. And if we don't do that, then how can we be actual followers of Srila Prabhupada? It might seem to be very successful, just like Sahajya Vaishnavism spread very widely over Bengal, and the true line became obscured. So who was successful? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, who stood against this and had much less followers, or those who had many followers, but who did not follow the standards and the teachings, including the social teachings of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Let us always remember, Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Adi, Pancharatra, Vidhing, Vina, Aikantaki, Hare, Bhakti, Utpata, Yaiva, Kalpate. So-called devotional service to Krishna that ignores or flouts the authorized Vedic literatures like the Shruti, Smriti, Puranas, Pancharatra, Narada Pancharatra, Srila Prabhupada specifically mentions, is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. An unnecessary disturbance in society. Why? People are chanting Hare Krishna. Again, that isn't, they may be taking LSD, but isn't that better than eating beef? Yeah, it is, probably. I'm not Yamaraj. But at the same time, it's considered an unnecessary disturbance. An example is given that someone comes to learn how to play piano. He's already had some piano lessons, and now he's going to a master piano teacher. Piano teacher finds out that his student has already learned something and immediately doubles the price for his tuition. So why? I already know something. I'm already ahead. I'm not a complete rookie. So why are you giving an extra price? You should give less price. Said, no, because if you learn in the wrong way, it's more difficult to teach you in the right way. So that consideration is there also. Preaching among Hindus in India and elsewhere is generally more easy in some ways because Indians, Hindus, they have a natural affinity. Of course, there are some demons who are among Hindus who blaspheme Krishna, but in general they have a natural affinity for Krishna, for bhakti. So in that way it's good, but at the same time to divest them of so many misconceptions is very difficult. So what are we doing? We're making a new kind of Hinduism in the West. You could say that, but it's not exactly, because Western people may take to chanting Hare Krishna and also take LSD, or maybe not want to accept the Vedic culture as presented in Srila Prabhupada's books, but they don't have the innate piety that birth in India generally confers. Again, stated in Shastra, birth in India, in human birth, is very special. So we're in a situation where Krishna consciousness or bhakti is spreading. It's not spreading only via ISKCON. There are many groups, some we'll say they're orthodox. ISKCON is not the only orthodox group spreading Gauriya Vaishnavism. There are so many branches of Gauriya Mats who are also doing so. But ISKCON, for all its various difficulties, is still by far the most dynamic and widespread. It might not be in future, just like in Bengal. The number of Sahajiyas, or upper sampradayas, the number of their adherents, it swamped the numbers of those who were following in what we can now understand is the pure line, the clear line, with regulated principles, adhering strictly to Shastra. And of course, sometimes it's difficult to say exactly what is right. Just like Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur stood against those who claimed that one can be a guru only by birth. But on the other hand, he did accept that you can be a guru by birth as long as you teach the right thing. You don't try to say that others can't be gurus if they're not qualified. So the line can be a bit fuzzy sometimes, but the point I'm making is that there will be, it's almost inevitable, that when there is a powerful preacher of God consciousness, that in his wake will follow others who, you could say, take advantage of that powerful preaching and propagate something which is Krishna consciousness, it's bhakti, but somewhat different. In this regard, I'm going to read some verses from the Adi Leela of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 12, the translation given by Srila Prabhupada. Concerning the Advaita Acharya branch of the tree, it's describing the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. and the two main sub-trunks or branches are Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu. So it's described here, the Advaita Acharya branch received the water supplied by the original gardener, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this way, the sub-branches were nourished and their fruits and flowers grew luxuriantly. So it states there are branches and sub-branches. That's to be expected. Gurus will initiate, they will preach, there will be followers, and they'll be in different branches. And in the branch of a tree, the fruit is more or less the same. The fruits, the flowers, the bark on the branch, it's more or less the same, but not exactly the same. So in the same way, there will be some differences in the branches, but it should be recognizably the same. Just like the leaves and the fruit of a tamarind tree are very different to those of a mango tree. They're both valuable, but they both give valuable fruits, but they have very significant differences also. But in the tree of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the fruit is prema phal, love of God. That should ultimately be the fruit that's given. And although something may be advertised as love of God, it's not such a cheap thing. That's the fault of the sahajiya. Sahajiya means those who take it cheaply, those who compromise. So continuing the reading from Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some of the branches, for unfortunate reasons, deviated from his path. So they're still branches. They may be considered branches in the sense that they're not entirely separate from the tree. They did come from the tree, but now they're deviated from the tree. Some branches did not accept the original trunk that vitalized and maintained the entire tree. When they thus became ungrateful, the original trunk was angry at them. Thus, Lord Chaitanya did not sprinkle upon them the water of his mercy, and they gradually withered and died. And sometimes we see that a tree somehow, maybe a monkey jumps on a thin branch and the branch becomes, it breaks, so it's still attached to the tree, but it's still slightly attached to the tree, but its direction is not its normal natural direction, and it's cut off in the sense that the water coming from the main trunk can no longer enter the branch, and gradually it withers and dies. So the water of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy in this analogy does not reach to the branch, and therefore they wither and die. By the mercy of Advaita Acharya, the devotees who strictly followed the path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu attained the shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet without difficulty. It should be concluded, therefore, that the path of Achyutananda, that's one who followed properly, is the essence of spiritual life. Those who did not follow this path simply scattered. Srila Prabhupada gives a purport to this. He's quoting from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a gardener, poured water on the root of the bhakti tree and thus nourished all its trunks and branches. But nevertheless, under the spell of Maya, some of the branches, not accepting the gardener who poured water on them, considered the trunk the only cause of the great bhakti kalpataru. The language is a bit shrouded in historical dispute, how some supposed followers of Advaita Acharya, they did not want to recognize that Advaita Acharya himself takes sustenance from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they want to say that he's individually great in himself. So here are some relevant points that one of my godbrothers has sent me in analyzing this important passage, because history repeats itself, that branches, if connected, are nourished and vitalized. Now let's apply this analogy to Srila Prabhupada and his teachings, if we're actually connected, then it should be seen that we're nourished and vitalized. Fruits and flowers luxuriantly grow. If we deviate from his path, then Lord Chaitanya does not sprinkle his mercy. And even though it may be a very big branch, it gradually withers and dies. Now that may, we may apply that if we would to the whole ISKCON movement in general. Are we luxuriantly developing? Do we have the signs of being connected to Srila Prabhupada being, by being nourished and vitalized? We as sub-branches or followers, by staying connected to the branch, who is Srila Prabhupada, we get the mercy of the trunk, Lord Chaitanya. Connected means strictly following the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, both in philosophy and in practice. That means we can't just cut out a major part of the philosophy or de-stress, de-emphasize something that Srila Prabhupada himself has emphasized. The result of strictly following Srila Prabhupada will be just like the followers of Achyutananda can attain the shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet without difficulty. If we strictly follow Srila Prabhupada, then we attain the shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet without difficulty. Why should anyone deviate? What is the seed reason, using the word seed, apropos to this analogy? They thus became ungrateful. Kritagna, the word is used, Bengali word, which can also mean not just ungrateful, but actually adverse to or opposed to. Now, what is this ungrateful? Some branches did not accept the original trunk that vitalized and maintained the entire tree, and they thus became ungrateful. So if we don't accept, if we don't follow, not just verbally saying, just like someone may say, yes, we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we chant Hare Krishna, we're followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but we don't follow his teachings, we don't follow the principles, then they're not really followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we don't accept, so in the same way, if we don't follow the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, we may say, yes, we give all respect to Prabhupada. But then, are you really? Do you follow no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication? Do you accept the teachings that Srila Prabhupada gave in his books, which are clearly derived, well, basically his books are shastras, translations and commentaries on shastras, giving in his explanations abundant quotes from shastras and from the previous acharyas. So this is a few points, no doubt, a few points about Western Sahajirism or upper sampradayas or maybe upper sampradaya in the making, no doubt, in the comments section that comes on whatever it is, Facebook or YouTube or both, there'll be, sorry, Ritvik is the solution, such and such is the solution, poison theory is the solution. Everyone's got their own solution, but the real thing is let us try to ascertain, understand clearly what Srila Prabhupada gave to us, accepting him as manifestly, obviously, the manifestation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy for spreading that mercy all over the world. Let us take what he said very seriously and follow it. Then we'll be safe. We may not get so many followers as other groups. We may not be popular by saying things that people don't like to hear, but we will be safely situated and the foundation will be strong. And from there, we can build a house in which the whole world can live if they agree to accept the teachings that Srila Prabhupada gave. So this is by no means an exhaustive discussion of various issues raised, but it's food for thought. Don't accept everything which might seem to be Krishna consciousness or what Srila Prabhupada wanted as actually being souls, we should study Srila Prabhupada's teachings, understand, take them into our hearts, hridayangam, and live according to them. And then by His mercy, yasya deve parabhakti yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahamana. Those who have firm faith in Guru to the extent that they have faith in Krishna, or to them all the purports of the Vedic knowledge will be revealed. We may say, well, we're making so many followers for Srila Prabhupada, this is what Prabhupada wanted, but Srila Prabhupada didn't want cheap followers. He didn't even want followers, per se. He wanted to make devotees who follow Krishna consciousness, Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Adi, Pancharatra, Viding, Vina, Aikandiki, Hare, Bhakti, Utpata, Yaiva, Kalpate. Strictly in line with Shastra and tradition. These kind of discussions will go on forever, no doubt, but there are, it's not that it's all the same. There are bona fide sampradaya and upper sampradaya. So we should know what is the difference. Parampara jano bhalo mate. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told us we should understand very well what is parampara, which means we should also understand what is not parampara. So this talk is offering a few thoughts in that line. In conclusion, anything that we do in relationship to Krishna is one way or the other, it's got to be auspicious. But if we want the real thing, real Krishna consciousness, we should understand that the great messenger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for bringing Krishna consciousness to the Western world, clearly deputed by Krishna himself to do so, is His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And if we really want Krishna, then we cannot do so by avoiding, sidestepping, or downplaying His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. If we want to understand Krishna as He is, especially for devotees who are not coming in a real traditional sampradaya, and even for those in the modern age, for most, the best way to understand the science of Krishna, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, and how to practice it, is to read Srila Prabhupada's books and to find the association where we will get the guidance to practice Krishna consciousness in the authorized manner that is described in those books. Srila Prabhupada founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness specifically for that purpose. Sahajiya means one who takes things cheaply, who thinks that everything is very easy. Don't think that we can get this highest gift of Krishna consciousness, pure love of Krishna, very cheaply. Krishna is merciful, but He's not cheap. Be careful of something which might look good and appeal to us, but, or if it undermines or neglects major parts of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, attempts to sidestep it, incorporates levels of behavior which are not acceptable even to worldly moral people. I'm talking about particularly taking intoxication, then we should be careful. Also, if something is not coming in a genuine parampara, genuine line of devotees, be careful. Be careful. Find out the right thing. Pray to Krishna if you really want Him, if you want to get Krishna. Some level of bhakti, will always help, but we should know that breaking the regulative principles, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, is always inauspicious, even if we chant Hare Krishna. It's like trying to light a fire by pouring petrol, gasoline on with one hand and water on the other. It's not going to work. And that refers to all the process of Krishna consciousness also. We may not break the principles, but tivrena bhakti yogen yajeta purusham param. We should practice Krishna consciousness very intensely if we are to develop intense love of Krishna, which is the actual goal of life. Hare Krishna.